With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live.
This is the Malcolm Roberts Show
on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome. This is Senator Malcolm Roberts broadcasting from Queensland, Australia, and we have two exciting guests on today. Two quite different guests, actually, but very, very admirable human beings. Before we start with the first guest, let me remind everyone that the two most important themes for my show are freedom, specifically freedom versus control, the age-long battle within each of us and quite often between groups of people. And secondly, personal responsibility and integrity. Both are fundamental for human progress and for people's livelihoods. So we've lined up some outstanding guests for you today. One, well, let's have a look at some recap for the events this week. We had federal parliament pass a childcare subsidy in parliament that extended childcare subsidies to people earning $529,999. That tells you a lot about federal parliament. People at that level of income can afford to have their own childcare entirely without subsidy. And yet parliament is handing out freebies to them because this Labor Greens government is in coalition to get as many votes as they can. They buy votes with taxpayers' money. I was going to talk about the Ukraine war, but we've got an expert on in as my first guest, and we'll leave it till then. And we had, of course, the G20 or the B20 or whatever 20 it is that was at the Conference of Parties, the UN World Economic Forum Alliance Conference of Parties 27 in Egypt. And they decided they would hand out money to third world countries, developing countries, from first world countries, developed countries, on the basis of reparations for climate damage. And yet there's no one ever presented any evidence that there's been any damage due to carbon dioxide from human activity. And then I'm very sad to say we passed in federal parliament. Well, I shouldn't say we passed because I voted against it, very clearly voted against it. And I spoke against it in September in the debate, the Territory Rights Bill, which was really I'm a very staunch advocate for states' rights. Territories are not states. The Northern Territory specifically has knocked back the opportunity to become a state. They voted to stay as a territory. But the core of this bill that was passed during this past week was giving territories the right to vote to bring in euthanasia. Wrong. The killing of humans is just another deterioration of our civilization, our values in the Western civilizations. And then to top it off, we had Pauline Hanson introducing her education bill to prevent indoctrination, which is rampant in our schools. Oh, and my goodness, you should have seen the Greens go off and some members of the Labor Party. We had Senator Jordan Steele John, a young man from Western Australia, crying in the Senate, saying Pauline was anti-transgender, Pauline was anti-this and anti-that, racism, and all the rest of the accusations flowed. And he was crying. Why? Because he thinks that discussing transgenderism hurts transgender people, and they commit suicide as children. He seems to have cause and effect completely reversed. The fact is that many adolescents have issues about their own gender. They question themselves. They've got many things they question themselves. That's part of adolescence. And when we go, when our teachers, some of our teachers, who I support teachers wonderfully because I was a student myself. I've taught people myself. I've also been president of a school board. A wonderful school, and also on the advisory board of the International Montessori Council in America. Children go through many periods of stress as adolescents. They're working themselves out. And if we bash them with indoctrination, it confuses them and it overwhelms them and it causes suicide. Senator Steele John had the cause and effect completely wrong. By treating people in adolescence as people, as confused people, needing compassion, needing care, needing love, they're confirmed and they work it out themselves. Because we can't push things like that on people. We have to help them to discover it in themselves. Then they've got it for life. They own it. So one of the things we must do as parents is listen to our children, have compassion for what they're going through, reassure them they'll come out the other end once they go through the life-changing aspects of adolescence. And above all, go and speak to principals and teachers that are indoctrinating our children. That's what real care looks like. Care, compassion, love. That's what adolescents need. So today we have a wonderful man by the name of David Truman as my first guest. David has an honors degree in Russian language and literature and political science. He's an Aussie. He's not a Russian who's moved to Australia. He's an Aussie, and he's developed it. Well, I'll explain how he's developed it. He teaches Russian history, literature and language, and Indonesian at the University of the Third Age. He spent a year on postgrad exchange at Moscow State University during the Cold War in the late 1960s and the 30 years in Canberra as a policy advisor and ministerial speechwriter. You'd have to have some guts, wouldn't you, to go to Russia in the middle of the Cold War after all the rubbish we were fed by the mouthpiece media. Since the fall of the Soviet Union, he has visited Russia four more times, totaling over 3 months, and is impressed at Russia's strident rejection of the cultural Marxism which has marched through the institutions of the West. And I must say, I've been very impressed with Vladimir Putin's comments about the West's decline due to cultural Marxism. Putin has been a strong conservative voice for Western civilization because the man knows and understands what Western civilization has given the world. David Truman has also made a deep study of Islamic history, scriptures, and doctrines. David believes that the West is sleepwalking into a collapse of its civilization, and so do I, and that's why we've got David on today. He says we have a nihilistic and self-hating intellectual class, agreed, and corrupt media, agreed, and corrupt big tech, agreed, who all push agendas that suit them and corrupt democracy, agreed. They push a one-sided narrative and censor contrary facts and opinion, agreed. The treatment of COVID, climate change, and the Ukraine crisis are outrageous cases in point, agreed on all. Globalist politicians compound the assault on our national interests and our personal freedoms by serving the interests of the deep state, the Great Reset, and the New World Order. This fella, David Truman, knows where it's at. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Malcolm. Good to be with you.
It's wonderful to catch up at last, and I'm looking forward still to coming together in the next year, 2023, and going around Queensland and spreading what you know, because we've got to get to the people. Before we start, David, what is something you appreciate? Anything at all?
I appreciate the benefits of Western civilization and the heritage that we have, which has come to us from our Christian roots, and also from the enormous benefits of science and technology and economic advancement, and also tolerance and diversity of opinion, which our Western civilization has given us. What really concerns me is the need to be positive and affirm and defend wholesome values in our society and oppose cynicism and nihilism.
Yes, and there's a challenge there for each of us, isn't there, David? Because we have to be acknowledging of the values of Western civilization, what it's given us, but at the same time, be aggressive in defending it, because it is under threat, isn't it? And can you describe us describe for us how it is under threat, and especially the subtlety of it, because it's not done in, you know, if a tank shells a city, we can see who's trying to attack us. But when this is going on, talk about some of the ways this is undermining us.
Actually, the biggest undermining of Western civilization is coming from within our own society. It's not
Good
from
point.
External. It's not from external enemies like China or for some people Russia or even things like that. It's particularly people who hate our own society because they've been corrupted by the ideas, particularly of Karl Marx, and by the French postmodernist philosophers like Derrida and Foucault, who preach that there are no absolutes and that you need to be pessimistic about your own society. The cultural Marxism is one of the things which motivates a lot of these people, and you find them everywhere. You find the worst people who push this destruction of Western civilization and poo-pooing of the benefits of it are the Greens. Now, the Greens are political, social, intellectual, and moral vermin. I absolutely loathe and despise the Greens. They're
agree
the
with
worst
that.
People in politics. But there's quite a few of them also in the Labor Party, and unfortunately, some people in the Conservative Party, so-called, are affected by ideas out of cultural Marxism. But if I talk briefly about why we should be grateful to Western civilization, well, the West has given the world most things that we all benefit from, nearly all scientific advancements, nearly all of them. The oldest and the greatest educational establishments, the universities of Oxford, Cambridge, Paris, and elsewhere, and in the Netherlands. We've also had curiosity and learning from other cultures. Western civilization was responsible for the recovery of language and history of ancient cultures like Babylon, ancient Egypt, and India, where they deciphered these languages and gave that history back to the people who inherited it. Western civilization has also given us the most successful means of commerce, with the free flow of capital lifting many millions of people out of poverty and creating unprecedented prosperity. It's also given us, particularly in the Anglosphere, it's also given us representative government, personal liberty, freedom of thought and conscience, freedom of speech and expression, civil society empowering individuals so that individuals are powerful potentially in their own right. They're not just objects of the state. And Another thing that Western civilization has given us is the idea of success through merit rather than through class or family or caste. This is something that's really peculiar to the West. It's also given us high cultural achievements in philosophy, going right back to the Greeks, literature, art, and music. There are other cultures that have their own music and art and so on, but the West certainly has the most developed. It's in the West that we had the Industrial Revolution from about 1760, which led on to all sorts of machines, manufacturing improvements, the telephone, television, and computers. These are all from the West. They're not from China or from India or from the Arab world. And Neil Ferguson, in his book Civilization, the West and the Rest, talks about a number of what he calls killer apps, to which he attributes the rise of the West. And one of those is the culture of trust. It is a huge advantage for people living in a culture where you feel that you can trust the person you're dealing with, in business, for example. One of the most fundamental things that we've got from the West is the is our values, which are derived from the Judeo-Christian moral rules, the Ten Commandments, respect for human life, dignity, faithfulness, and honesty. Some of those are replicated in part in other cultures, but the West really is the climax of those. Another thing that we have is tolerance of religious belief and opinion. You go to a number of other countries, whether it's Myanmar, where the regime persecutes anybody that isn't Buddhist. You go to India, where you've got radical Hindus who kill Christians as well as Muslims. You've got the Islamic world, almost all of it, except most of Indonesia, where there is massive intolerance. And there's also in the West a capacity for self-reflection, self-criticism, and self-improvement. And the killer of the question is, where do so many third world people want to migrate into? It's into the West. They don't want to migrate to Saudi Arabia or China or anywhere else. They want to go into the West. Why? Because the West gives them unparalleled advantages. And one of the really bad things that we have is this cult of diversity. Now, diversity is supposed to be a wonderful thing, but it's not practiced in non-Western countries. And I don't believe that it's a strength. It's a weakness. Another thing, it's Western countries in which you probably have less racism than in other cultures. So I'll stop there.
Pick up your last point about racism and bigotry. I was traveling around the United States and I dropped into, this is when I was in my mid-20s, and I dropped in to see a girlfriend in Madison, Wisconsin. And she had gone back to university to be a medical student. And she was sharing a house with a Korean student in Madison. Yep. And Carol introduced me to the Korean student and said, "Malcolm from Australia." And the Korean student looked at me and said, "Oh, white Australia policy, hey?" And I said, "Yes, and you really love the Japanese, don't you?" She didn't issue another word about racism or bigotry, nothing at all, because she knew that they disdain so many Koreans and Japanese hate each other. So this is something that's part of the human condition. It's not something that is in the West. It's something that has been decreasing in the West, I would say. But let's go to an ad break, and then when we come back, let's talk about the fact that those values and traits that you just described are literally earth-shattering, and why they're so valuable and why they're being diluted. So let's go to our break to our sponsors.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
Joe Biden said outright that he's going to do everything he can constitutionally to keep Donald Trump from ever sitting in the big seat again.
I mean, it'd be a continuation of what is Donald Trump has been subjected to since first signaled he was going to run for president, which is they have absolutely gone every way outside of the law, outside of fairness, outside of due process, outside of justice, in order to destroy and otherwise stop Donald Trump in his desire to serve the country and to serve as president and anything he's tried to accomplish, really. To use the term, I guess the popular term, they really jumped the shark. You know, I mean, some of the investigations that the back and forth that went on between like special prosecutors and so forth. But in this case, they have completely just fabricated out of thin air, masses of fake information. And I mean, it's crazy. It's like the scandal industrial fabrication complex.
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. The digital ID will be the collar around our necks.
Their power is only what we allow them to have.
Don't comply at all costs. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back. This is Senator Malcolm Roberts in Queensland, and I'm with my special guest today, David Truman. At TNT Radio, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our guests' facts and views and opinions on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7, online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT Radio, that's for sure. And we are the only source where you will get the facts on COVID injections, the facts on COVID restrictions, the facts on COVID mismanagement, the fact on the climate scam, the fact on many intrusions, current and future, on into personal liberties, such as the digital identity. We're the only ones who will talk openly with guests who want to talk about the United Nations control apparatus, the World Economic Forum control apparatus. So TNT, we've got you covered. So David, welcome back. Yep. Now, you raise some really fundamental points, not only science, which we know came from the West, although it is true, isn't it, that some of the early Middle Easterners were scientific, and sometimes some of the early Muslims were scientific as well, but they didn't keep that and they deteriorated. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. And also the idea of, you know, the golden age of Islam is actually a misconception, because most of the scientific and philosophical advances at the time were done by Zimi Christians and Sabians and Jews living under Islamic control. And you know, we talk about Arabic numerals. Well, they're not Arabic numerals. They're actually Indian numerals, Hindu numerals that were appropriated by the Arabs. Arab culture, Arab Muslim culture, in fact, did benefit from some of those things from outside, but then it shot its brains out by a war between people within Islam who, on the one hand, wanted to believe in Greek type philosophy and the idea that you could derive laws of nature by studying it, and others on the other side who said no, there are no laws of nature. Everything that happens is because at the specific instant Allah willed it. So if an apple falls from a tree, it's not because of the law of gravity or anything like that. It's because Allah willed it. And of course, that particular thing, that particular attitude, which won in Islam, destroyed the whole connection between cause and effect, and destroyed the whole basis of the scientific method. And so the Islamic world went to sleep.
Mm-hmm. That's very well put. There, you know, I keep coming back. I'm not a churchgoer because I don't get much value out of so many churches these days. That's not to say some churches are wonderful, but they seem to have lost touch with what Jesus's real message was. The churches quite often preach guilt and fear, whereas Christ preached the opposite, the complete opposite, the liberation from guilt and fear. So we seem to have, David, I mean, we're not going to get into a philosophical discussion about religion here, but we seem to have some religions based on deities that are punishing humans who transgress. They spread fear and guilt. Then we have other religions that are based on some vague, all-powerful superstitions that we must obey and follow. And then we've got Christianity, where God loves us, God forgives us, God created us, God accepts us. And only in that freedom can we really think freely and exchange freely and interact freely, because we respect each other.
Can I interpose there too? The difference between Christianity and, for example, Islam on that, which supposedly also believes in one God, is that in Christianity you have free will. You have the right, you have the ability to follow the divine law, if you wish, as in the Ten Commandments. But other people don't have the right to compel you, whereas in Islam, they don't conceive any personal space at all.
And only when people are free, whether it be an employee in a business, free to create, free to initiate something, use his initiative or her initiative, and interact with others, develop a new idea, only where people are free can they discover for themselves their own power and take responsibility. Only when people are free. What did Maria Montessori say? Wherever you see people with limited responsibility, you will see a lack of freedom. And it's that freedom that Christianity gives, a freedom that brings responsibility that is so unique to Christianity. Is that a fair comment?
Yes, it is. And it's also within Christianity that the war against slavery was begun in the late 18th century. And slavery, of course, still exists in parts of the Muslim world, but it doesn't exist now in the Christian world because the idea triumphed, going back to Christ's teachings, of the inestimable worth of every human being.
Well, let me get on to something else. What you're talking about, it's actually extending our discussion, not onto something else. What you're talking about is culture. Yep. People know these days, it's happened in the last 20 years, but I've been aware for 40 years or so of the importance of culture. You can have the best technology in the world within your business, for example, your corporation. But if you haven't got a suitable culture, it will never perform. The culture is the driving force. It's the gel. It's the mortar between the bricks. The culture is the most powerful driver of productivity there is, without a doubt. It's the most powerful driver of safety.
Not only of productivity, but also of action in general.
Yes.
A quite famous anti-slavery American politician in the earlier in the 19th century, James Freeman Clark, said, "All the strength and force of man come from his faith in things unseen." So he's saying that people are motivated most importantly by values, and by faith, and this can be a force for evil if you get fanatics who want to monster other people, but also it can drive people to the most sublimely positive things. And one of the terrible things that's happening to the West with de-Christianization is the gutting of the culture of the foundations of values, and it's being replaced in many people by nihilism, belief in nothing. And how can a culture survive if its guts have been pulled out?
Well, that's where I was going, because I wanted to try and be brief, so I give you a lot of time to discuss this next topic and take it away for the next 8 minutes through to the next ad break. But essentially, culture is the most powerful driver of behaviors, for good or bad. And and in the West, it's gone back to its Christian roots. It is what has given us such a wonderful place to live in, a civilization that's developed so rapidly, and with so much respect for human life. What is destroying that? Now, you mentioned our internal enemies. Can you talk about our internal enemies, where they are, what they're doing, and can you explain? I believe that they're sourced overseas and driven from overseas. Can you give us some understanding of how we're destroying ourselves?
Well, it goes back most fundamentally to Marxism.
What is Marxism?
Well, Marx, as the Communist Manifesto, talks about a spectre haunting Europe. And of course, he divides the world up into exploiters and exploited, and of course, ratcheting forward
victims
to the current period with critical theory, you've got oppressors and oppressed. But communism is not so much a spectre, but it's more like a zombie, a soulless, inhuman ideology that's failed and enslaved people everywhere and murdered people. And, you know, when he says, to paraphrase the slogan, you could say intellectuals of the world unite. You've nothing to lose but your brains. Marxism is the basis of class politics. But and of course, that led to the Russian Revolution of late 1917 and the Soviet experiment that lasted up until 1991. But in the communist world, as early as 1919, the Communist International, Comintern, decided to fight for the overthrow of the international bourgeoisie, in other words, not just in Russia. And a couple of Marxist theoreticians, Gramsci in Italy and Lukács in Hungary, decided that the Christianized West was blocking a communist world order. And Gramsci talked about the need for a long march through the culture, attacking the traditional family, churches, schools, media, entertainment, civic organizations, literature, science, and the presentation and revision of history. And that's actually what's been happening in our society. And unfortunately, only the left has been fighting this culture war for half a century, and it's only in the last decade or two that a few conservatives in the West have twigged to what's happening and have decided to fight back, but nowhere near enough of them. In 1923, these Marxists set up the Institution for Marxism in Frankfurt, which later on came to be called the Frankfurt School. And it's
which year, David? Which year? Yeah?
1923.
Which year did the Frankfurt School start?
Yeah, 1923.
Thank you.
And its target was annihilation of the old values and their replacement. And the Frankfurt School developed critical theory, which is the destructive criticism of Western culture, including Christianity, capitalism, authority, the family, patriarchy, morality, tradition, sexual restraint, loyalty, patriotism, nationalism, heredity, ethnocentrism and conservatism. All of those things which are definers of the Western culture, critical theory attacks. And it decided that anything from the West is to be libeled and attacked. Everything in the world that's bad has to be attributed to the West. And as a result of that, it developed a tactic of cultural pessimism. And you see how people who've been captured by this ideology have pushed this through the education system. How many students go to university and come out full of cultural pessimism, that everything in our history is all racism and xenophobia and genocide?
Well, now it makes a lot more sense, because you've just hit on me that the core of Marxism is setting up of oppressors versus oppressed, and of course that's a perfect way of getting control. But the consequences of that, because the controllers who will stand forward and say, "I will stop you from being oppressed, and I will beat the oppressors down," so they take over to protect people. But what happens is that they create enormous numbers of victims. Those victims are disempowered, so they've now got people disempowered following them and doing what they're told to do. So this is what's so deliberate and planned, and people don't understand. We've got these people replacing the inherent positivity and optimism of Christ's basic message, which liberated the world, and replacing it with a control. So we've got Christianity's freedom being replaced by an authoritarian control, gussied up and camouflaged behind what appears to be protecting of victims, but they're creating victims, which makes people helpless.
And the story is actually worse than what I said, because while the Frankfurt School was basically about trying to remake the world in a Marxist or communist sort of way, the problem that they had was that the Western working class, which is what they were supposed to be trying to advance, wasn't revolting. People kept on voting for Labour parties in the United Kingdom and elsewhere, and they were compromising with capitalism, and the idea of a repeat of the Russian Revolution was pushing further and further away. So the Frankfurt School relocated during the 1930s out of Nazi Germany to universities in the United States. And one of their, and probably the most baleful of their ideologists, was Herbert Marcuse. And he asked the question, who could substitute for the working class as the agents of revolution? And his answer was, marginalized groups, including black militants, feminists, homosexual militants, the asocial, the alienated and third world revolutionaries like Che Guevara, the mass murderer. And of course, that list of victim groups now has been expanded to include Muslims who are alleged victims of racism, and of course the environment, which is being trashed by Western capitalists. And this cultural Marxism, which is this pushing of marginalized groups, is the basis for universities being infested by cultural Marxist departments like gay studies, black studies, women's studies, peace and conflict studies, and so on, along with the green left. Now, none of those departments encourage genuine critical thought, which is what a university is supposed to be about. They peddle only a one-sided agenda of destructive pessimism.
Now, David, we're going to have to go to a break.
Marcuse also wrote a famous essay about what he called repressive tolerance. In other words, that the left should tolerate ideas that agree with it and repress those that don't. And that ideology lives in the ABC.
Right, we're going to have to go to a break. While we're on the break, could you think of the titles of one or two of your articles that are on your website? I'm going to give this website now and give people an idea of how to contact you. So could you think about that and just list those, and then we'll get onto the solutions, because I think people are aware that this creation of victims and then this militarization of victimhood, entrenchment of victimhood, is what's eating the heart of our culture and our civilization. The website is freedomandheritage.org.au. Freedom and Heritage, one word, .org.au. David is also active on Twitter. His handle is @DavidTruman3. That's a capital D, capital T, one word, DavidTruman3. You'll find a list of books, a list of articles that David and others have written at freedomandheritage.org.au. We'll get David's view on some of the best to go to, and then we'll ask David after the break to tell us about two things. First of all, the solutions, what we need to get back to. And secondly, his take on the Ukraine war.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I myself am thankful for my family, my health, and the show I do here on TNT Radio. But I also must say I'm very thankful that we're finally rid of the quote-unquote leadership of one Nancy Pelosi in Congress. The can-do-no-wrong darling of the left-wing media announced last week that she would no longer seek a leadership position and was immediately declared the most wonderful person ever to walk the halls of Congress by a sycophant media. Well, when I think of Nancy Pelosi, I think of the disrespect she showed for President Trump and our nation when she ripped up his State of the Union script following the address in 2020. And back in July of 2020, after a mob tore down a statue of Christopher Columbus and threw it in the harbor in her native city of Baltimore, she shrugged.
I don't care that much about statues.
Shouldn't that be done by a commission or the city council, not a mob in the middle of the night throwing it into the harbor?
People will do what they do.
People will do what they do? That's anarchy. That's Nancy Pelosi. We should all be thankful she's decided to fade away. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Hi, Gemma Simon here from the Newcastle Jets for RAD. Playing any sport means setting the right example. And it's not just about how players focus and behave when they're on the field. It's also about their actions and behaviours off it. That includes things like drink driving, drug driving, and driver distractions. No one can perform properly if they're under the influence or distracted. So make sure you make the right decisions when it comes to getting behind the wheel of a car, and you'll definitely earn respect for it.
A message from RAD.
The doctors that are supposed to protect the vulnerable are killing them with their protocols knowingly. They are absolute cowards. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. This is Senator Malcolm Roberts in Queensland, Australia, and I'm with David Truman. For a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio, simply visit our website at tntradio.com. Live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction, truth from propaganda, right here on TNT Radio every day of the week, 24 hours of every day. David, what are the articles you'd recommend people read?
Well, on the website, freedomandheritage.org.au, the articles are grouped into about seven main categories. So Western and Australian heritage, and I'd recommend in that the article, What Are Australian Values? I wrote that article quite some years ago. And then there's a series of articles on cultural Marxism, there's an article on what is cultural Marxism, and another one, what is fascist and what is extreme right. There's another section called Multiculturalism and Immigration, that includes quite a number of articles, and one of them is Sweden's Ongoing National Collapse, Portent for the West. Then there's quite a few on Islam, and some of the articles there are, Is Islam Just Another Abrahamic Faith? An Analysis of the Issues. And Chronology of the Quran and the Doctrine of Abrogation. Then under Globalism, Agenda 21 and the New World Order, there's an article, Globalism and Nationalism, and The Treason of Open Borders Pushed by Our Elites. And then the last two, Current Events, I've got an article, Invasion Day and All That, and Welcome to Country and the Rest of the Aboriginal Industry Rigmarole. And the last one, Culture War. There's a very important article called It's Time to Take Back Our Society from the Left. And the last one I recommend particularly is De-Christianization of America and Much of the West, The Consequences Prophesied by Solzhenitsyn and Fulton Sheen.
Thank you very much. And for those who are not familiar with David's website, which will be most people here, of those seven categories that he just listed, there are sometimes 8, 10, 29 articles in each section. There is plenty here to keep you busy in really learning about what's happening to our society. So thank you for that, David. Can you tell us now how we defeat this, how we get back our country? What do we need to do as individuals and as collective?
The most important thing that we need to push our elected representatives to do, however we do it, is to take back the drivers of cultural change from the left. The education system, the public media, and also, so far as we can, with new appointments, the judiciary. Because these three power centres are pushing our society into further and further down the drain. I mean, in today's news, there's a decision by a Queensland judge to refuse Clive Palmer's proposed Galilee coal mine on the basis of climate change. That's a political issue. That's not the role of judges, for goodness sake. Another thing that we need to
were those three key areas, David? Education, judiciary, and?
Take back the drivers of cultural change from the left. The education system, we're right through it. The public media, including, of course, their ABC, and the judiciary.
Yes. Thank you.
You can't remove judges the way you can others, but every judicial appointment is political.
Yep. Okay. Keep going. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Okay. Another thing we need to do is to ensure that our kids learn history, not black armband stuff from the left, but true history. We need to teach civics about how our government system works and the rights that people have to engage in civil society. We also need to encourage people to stop voting for the same tired major parties who are giving more and more of the same, and with even the Conservatives into paralytic me-tooism. Vote for genuine Conservative freedom minor parties and cross preference. We should certainly oppose any lowering the voting age to 16-year-olds. I mean, these people are still wet about the ears. They have no maturity. People need also to read non-mainstream media so that they can take the red pill and be aware of what's actually happening in the world rather than swallowing and taking as gospel truth the narrative that's always the same from the owners of information. We need to get people to join civil society groups where they can combine with like-minded people and push what they need to happen. We need to oppose vaccine mandates, if necessary, by totally uncivil disobedience. I mean, the destruction of freedom that governments here have imposed upon us is outrageous. We need to confront with proper information the climate emergency scam. It is a scam. It is a lie. And particularly, as part of all that, we need to confront the Greens intellectually to tell people what their policies actually are and call them out.
That is particularly important.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I just got distracted there. So let me just, I had to do something for the studio. So these are fundamental things. They're very, very simple things, but people don't do them. Why don't they do them? Are they just not aware, or are they not aware of the values?
We live in a society where people take everything, so many people take everything for granted. They don't realize that where we're at now is historically extremely privileged, and freedom, as well as the economic things that it's given us, needs to be re-earned every generation, because if you let people take it away, you lose it. Ronald Reagan talked about that quite some years ago. But a lot of people feel disempowered. Now, I had a friend from Indonesia who thought that it didn't matter how you vote because you're only one out of many millions, and the political system was corrupt anyway. And to some extent, that's true here as well. But if you take a defeatist attitude, and a lot of people do, and they think they can afford not to be interested in politics. Unfortunately, politics takes an interest in them and affects what happens to them.
Exactly. They say if you're not into politics, politics is into you. David, yep. we've had a problem with trying to communicate with our next guest. Are you able to stay for another hour?
Oh, perhaps, yes, I suppose so. Yep.
Oh, good. Okay. We'll keep trying to contact, but there's some communications problem. But I'd love to explore some things further with you if we can't mm-hmm. grab Steve. Okay. Thank you for that. So let's talk a little bit about the Ukraine war, please. Give me the background to this war, because you call them the mainstream media. I don't give them the dignity of that. I call them the mouthpiece media, the mockingbird media, the lamestream media, the legacy media, the charlatan. What's that term I use? The media whores of the mouthpiece media. They're giving us one side only on climate, and it's lies. They're giving us one side only on the COVID virus, which is lies. One side only on the injections, the experimental gene therapy based injections, COVID injections, and they're lies. They're giving us one side on the Ukrainian war, and are they lies? They seem to be to me.
Well, they are lies, and they're also, in most cases, historically illiterate. There's a long history and a short history in the relations between Russia and Ukraine. The long history is that all of the East Slavs, including today's Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus, were one polity and also one linguistic area, and the differentiation of languages happened later. The whole area was in an area called Kiev and Rus, where Kiev was the mother city for a couple of hundred years, and then you had the Mongol invasion and the fragmentation of the what I can call loosely the Russian lands into three parts: the northeast, the northwest. The northwest was Novgorod, and the southwest, which was Kiev, And then you had a long period of competition between those areas for who would be able to reunite the Russian lands. When Peter the Great inherited Russia plus what we could call today the Eastern Ukraine, because the Eastern Ukraine had been part of the Kingdom of Poland, and... But the Cossacks in the eastern Ukraine were Orthodox, and they petitioned the Tsar in Muscovy three times to take them out of Poland, which was persecuting, which was Catholic and persecuting the Orthodox, then take them into Muscovy. And on the third time, he agreed, yes, I can have a war with Poland. And that's what happened. And after a number of years of war, a treaty gave eastern Ukraine, including the city of Kharkiv and also Kiev on the other side, to Muscovy. And after that period, the East had separate history from the West. The West remained subject to more Western influences. But all of this area was later on incorporated in the Russian Empire, and when Catherine the Great defeated the Crimean Tatars in 1783, she established the headquarters of their Black Sea Fleet in the western part of Crimea in Sevastopol, and that, of course, is the basis of a tragedy that after the unscrambling of the Soviet omelet in 1991, all of a sudden the Russian Federation, as it now was, found the headquarters of its Black Sea Fleet in another country, which was unacceptable to national security. The other thing is that Crimea has never spoken Ukrainian anyway. It never was part of the original territory of Kiev and Rus, and it's never spoken Ukrainian. And it was only transferred from the Russian Soviet Republic to Crimea, to Ukraine by Khrushchev in 1954 for purely geographic convenience, because the Soviet Union, one country, was building a big dam on the Dnieper River to provide water and power to southern Ukraine and Crimea, and it was just geographically convenient, nothing to do with politics. But then, come 1991, Ukraine gets independence with the 1954 boundaries, and that's not what Crimea actually ever wanted. And the other thing, of course, is that with the eastern Ukraine, the Donetsk and Lugansk and those areas have always spoken Russian rather than Ukrainian. And in a nutshell, the current borders of Ukraine, the official borders, are not sustainable. And There needs to be the ability of people to vote area by area for which area they want to be in. Zelensky, when he came to power in 2013, was controlled, and then there was the Maidan coup, which the U.S. embassy engineered the getting rid of President Yanukovych, who came from the east, eastern Ukraine, when that happened, the eastern Ukraine people rebelled, and they said no, we don't accept this coup, It really went down the tube from there. After the war started in February this year, a couple of months after that, there was pressure for negotiations between Zelensky for Ukraine and Russia, and Boris Johnson from the UK stymied implementation of the Minsk agreements that had been agreed to between the two countries, and he was determined, along with NATO and the US, to use Ukraine as a proxy to fight and contain Russia, and that was ruinously bad policy. The West has been its own worst enemy in this. Instead of there needed to be negotiations, and including about sustainable borders. Existing borders are not sustainable. They need to change. I don't believe that the Western Ukraine and the Northern Ukraine wants to be part of Russia, but I certainly believe that a large part of the Eastern and Southern Ukraine does want to be in Russia, and they should be allowed to do that, and that will stop the fighting.
So thank you for that. Let's continue with this after the news break, which is on in 2 minutes. So we'll go to the news break in 2 minutes. But what it seems to me you're saying, David, and it gels, is that we've seen the United States and some allies, sadly Australia, one of them, madly follow the United States into conflicts that have been engineered, whether it be in the Middle East, whether it be in Asia, whether it be in South and Central America. We've seen the United States. Look, I'm married to an American. Both our children are dual citizens, Americans. So they're American and Australian. And I love America. I went there when I was in my impressionable mid-20s, and I just was fascinated by it. I've since learned that many of the things that I saw in America were actually started in the 19th century in Britain and some of them in Europe. But nonetheless, the United States has been the finishing school for these inherently wonderful concepts. But the United States has also been taken over and has been used to wage war. And let's discuss that more, whether you agree or disagree. We have to stop following the people that control the United States madly around our planet, and we have to start standing up for ourselves and educating ourselves. Let's throw that open to you in the hour after the news. Thank you very much, David. This is Senator Malcolm Roberts, back with David Truman in a few minutes.